We do have a number of visitors with us today, and we're very glad that you are here. If you're traveling through the area, thank you for taking time to make worshiping the Lord and getting together with brethren a priority. And if you're in the local area, please let us know a little bit more about you. We're really glad that you're here today. We'd love to get to speak with you some more. Several of us are going to be out of town this week. Cammie Bunting's camp of Bible classes and studies for girls is going on this week. And Joe Work's camp of Bible classes for boys is also going on this week. And so Lori B. cooks for the girls' camp, and the B-Seckers help out with that. And we'll also, Jonathan will be, I know, helping out with the other one as well. So they'll be gone. Wilson and Carolyn also be up there helping with that with Cammie's. And several of us will be at the boys, Josh Amaros and Matt and the boys and I, and Bertina will be teaching at the girls. Brianna will be helping over at the girls' camp. Stephen will be at Joe's camp. So, and maybe some other ones. So several of us will be out. Please pray for us that we have a good, safe week. It's always a very good week there, and we want to be everybody travel there well, safely, and back. I also want to apologize for running late this morning, trying to get ready for camp, and then we're going to go teach at Upper Darby this afternoon by Philly, and then up to the camp. It was tough getting ready this morning, trying to load the car. A stray cat kept getting in and out of the house while the door was open. I was on the way here, realized I left my bedding back at home and was preferring not to use a stone for a pillow. I had to run back, but apologize for the chaos and getting late. Let's go ahead now and get into our study today, which continues our study on parenting. We're talking about the mistakes that it is so easy for us to make as parents. If you're raising children, especially if you're raising young children, you have such a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. If you're raising older children, a lot of the latter points apply more to older children. If you're a grandparent, you can apply a lot of these things in people's lives as well. And if you're not a parent, but you interact with young people and you care about young people, you can have an incredible influence sometimes on young people. There was a lady that helped me immensely when I was in college. Her name was Connie Ashley. She helped me and a lot of people. And she never had children of her own, but she had a world of children that she, of young people that she helped guide and provide for in all sorts of ways. And if you're a young person, Be thinking and planning about what kind of family you want to have if you choose to marry and are blessed with children. All right. I'm not going to go through all the charts previously. I wanted to remind us, I put them all just on one chart this time. Previous mistakes: failing to discipline, rewarding misbehavior, expecting misbehavior, failing to be consistent, thinking we don't have time, which is going to guarantee a lot of problems. Training them to ignore instructions given in a calm voice so that they only respond after you speak in a harsh voice. And you wonder why they only respond then. It's because we've trained them that way. Failing to use both rod and reproof, failing to control self, discouraging, provoking to wrath, failing to have joy in the home. Controlling the situation instead of training the child. Train the child and it will both control the situation and train the child. Mistaken taking them to church for bringing up and nurturing the admonition of the Lord, thinking if we don't allow this, they might rebel and leave the church. Well, if they're already leaving the Lord, you've got a more serious problem than them not wanting to be on the pew. Failing to teach and train humility, assuming cultural norms, and going into defense mode when our children are wrong. And that brings us today to this point. Focusing on home income over home outcome. Now, there's two things that are important there. But we're talking about priorities here.
When you look through Scripture, you see people that God was pleased with who were very wealthy. Abraham was a wealthy man. Job was an extremely wealthy man. God was pleased with them. You see the widow with two little coins, and that's all she had. And Jesus, who, if you look through the Gospels, Jesus does not pass out a whole lot of compliments. He does a lot of teaching. He does a lot of correction. Not very often does he single somebody out to compliment. He singled her out. You can be wealthy and serve God. You can be poor and serve God. You can be in between and serve God. The point here is not that you shouldn't have money, but watch what you make the priority. We all need dinner, right? Do you like to have some ice cream after dinner? I do. There's nothing wrong with having ice cream after dinner. There is something wrong with not having dinner and just having ice cream. You know, you're going to have some health problems in the family if there's never any dinner, but hey, got ice cream. So let prosperity or wealth or some extra things and nice things in life be seen to be the add-ons that they can be instead of the main entree. And so we have this from Proverbs chapter 15, verse 17. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. The point being here that, and you know, you can have arguments and stress in the family over vegetables. You can have arguments and stress in the family and a lack of love over ribeye. God doesn't want it that way. We need to correct and apologize and do what we need to do to make our homes be a place where love is and be a place where the fear of the Lord is. If you've got that and you also have fattened ox, wonderful. And some wealth, wonderful. But don't get the priorities wrong. It's the home, not the house. It's the family, not the stuff. Friend of mine, I'm going to give you a few anecdotes to help illustrate this concept. A friend of mine was called once to counsel a family. And their problem was, there was just no time for family and everything was stressed out. Dad had a full-time career. Mom had a full-time career. The kids are being kind of neglected and things aren't going well with the kids. The husband feels neglected. Everybody's tired. Dad comes home from work tired. And mom comes home from work tired. And then people need to be fed. And there's not time to do things with people. Not time for the husband. Not time for the... And it's just going kind of badly. And so they're describing all these problems, and my friend suggested, and it's a nice home with lots of nice stuff, and he said, it seems like a lot of the problems you're describing are because there's so much time spent working that there's not enough time for the family. Have you considered if because she particularly was talking about her time stress, being at home with the family, and the family's response was, what? And lose all this? In other words, the stuff was the priority. Do our homes reflect scriptural priorities or cultural priorities? When I was in high school, I think I mentioned this maybe recently. Pardon me if I did, I'll mention it again. One of my friends that I hung around with lived on the same block with me. This is, and it can, both moms and dads can put everything else before the family sometimes. This friend of mine in high school had two cars. They were both Mustangs. He had two cars. He had like a 71 Mach 1. This was around 72, 73 or so. And he had a classic early Mustang 2+2. Okay, in high school, this is what he said to me. He said, my dad will give me anything I ask for. He'll buy me anything I ask for. But he never had time to go out and throw a ball with me. Now that's sad. Do you think it made a difference to him? Why do you think he said that to me? It wasn't very long after that. I'd lost track of him, but just shortly after college, a mutual friend told me he was, at that point, pretty much an alcoholic. There's some foolish decisions made by that father. Older women, and on women, listen to this from Titus chapter 2, verse 3. Older women are told, train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sober-minded, chaste, workers at home, kind, being in subjection to their own husbands. We have a culture that has adopted some ideas that have really been destructive to society. Now, throughout history, there's been a lot of work to do for men and women, but we've adopted a culture now where it's quite the norm in a lot of situations for two people to devote their lives to making income, and when children come in, they're quickly put, even as infants, into a daycare system. And then they're either in daycare or school or somewhere else. There's very, very little time with the parents. And the focuses end up being all in the wrong place. And those children end up not really being raised. That's part of why our society is what it is today. People used to raise children. And by and large, today, many people are not. Now, this doesn't mean that a woman cannot bring income into the family. Look at Proverbs chapter 31. Listen to the worthy woman. This is an industrious woman, hardworking woman. An excellent wife who can find, I'm starting in verse 10, the heart of her husband, she is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax. She works willingly with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night, provides food for her household, portions for her maidens. She considers a field, buys it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength, makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff. Her hands hold the spindle. So she's making clothing. She's up early. She's working late. And she's also taking care of the poor. She's taking care of her family. She's taking care of poor people. She opens her hand to the poor. She reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household. All her household are clothed in scarlet. She's clothing her family, she's taking care of them, and she's taking care of them in good standards as well. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom. The teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the way of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also and praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful. Beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands. Let her works praise her in the gates. And you think of also Tabitha and the work that she did in providing for other people and how she was appreciated by the widows that she cared for and everything. This woman works hard and she's bringing income in that's helping the family. But when you say this woman is devoted to her family and centered on her family, we've got a culture that encourages devotion to careers and being away from the family. And that has results. Years ago, when the Berlin Wall came down, we moved to East Europe. And we moved to Czechoslovakia and helped plan to work there. And it was interesting seeing the economy of something that had just been under communism. There was a couple, they were agnostics, and they asked us one day over for dinner. We went over for dinner, and we went for a walk. And by the way, those people walk. I said, after lunch, we'll go for a walk. It's like a three-hour hike. But on that hike, she asked an interesting question. Before I tell you the question, I want to describe their economic status. They had a very adequate, good apartment. They fixed a wonderful meal with some meat and potatoes, and it was very enjoyable. They had some extras in life. They'd recently gone and vacationed in Switzerland. I'll tell you how in just a minute. His income per year was between $1,000 and $2,000. I can't remember if it was $1,500 or $1,800 per year. She also worked. They were both worked in programming or something, electronics, computers, something. I don't remember exactly what it was. She also made about the same amount. So together, they made a total of around $3,000+ a year. How on earth could they? Here's how they went to vacationing to Switzerland. Through their work connections, they were able to get rail passes, either very cheaply or free. And they would sleep in the park. And they wouldn't buy food in Switzerland. They would load up on bread and stuff from Czechoslovakia. They would get on the train. They didn't go spend money here, spend money there, spend money here. They went to Switzerland. They saw it. They slept in the park. They ate their bread. They went home. But she said one time, she said, they told her, and some of you have heard this story before, but it made a huge impression on me. One of the things about the Czechs was how responsible they were with money. Because in their system, you couldn't count on anybody else bailing you out because people didn't have a lot of extra, and so you had to take care of yourself. I think I only remember two times people asked if they could borrow money. I loaned them money. In both cases, they just paid me back immediately and never asked again. It's remarkable. She said, they said, you'll have to try the India restaurant down on Wenceslas Square. She said, it's our favorite restaurant. They said, we go there once a year. And then one of them had to correct me. I said, actually, last year we didn't go. You know why they didn't go? The price went up. The price of a meal went up about $1.50. So last year, they didn't go. Once a year, they would go to this restaurant. Last year, they didn't go. She said, my daughters like green peppers, but they're too expensive. So we don't have them very often. Every once in a while, I will buy a green pepper and let them split it. Now, with that background, here's the question. She's walking along and she asks my friend Mike Marr and myself, she says, in America, do most women, work outside the home? And we said, we probably thought yes. And then she said, why? Do they do it because they have to or because they want to? That was a powerful question. There are cases where it's have to. There are cases where there's economic difficulties, there's illnesses, there's husbands that desert families. And then there's cases like Proverbs 31 where the woman... the man may make confined income too, but she's being very industriously. She's making money. She's selling things. She's a wholesaler, but she's still centered in her home. But you get the point. She said, she was kind of puzzled by that, or she said, I work because I have to. I wish I could be home with my girls. So that's a powerful question. And for different people, it may be different answers. But for a whole lot of people, you know what I think the answer is? Because we want to. We want that extra income. We want that more and more money. We've got to think about our priorities in this regard. Number 18, mistaking parenting for paying a daycare bill. That's not parenting. Now, there may be some time where somebody needs to use daycare, but that's not parenting. There are, I'm going to give you a few anecdotes on this. First, let's think about these scriptures. Remember what Deuteronomy 6 said? And this was talking about fathers in Israel. It said what? Teach your children when you rise up, when you lay down, when you're walking with them in the way. Teach them. In Ephesians 6, it talks about fathers. Bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In Titus 2, 3 through 5, the older women are to train the younger women. Love your husbands. Love your children. Be workers at home, etc. There's a website, and this is a generalization and an overstatement. I tried to find it last night, but my computer wasn't working right. So I'm not sure if it's still an active site or not, but it used to be, and it may still be there. It's called daycaresdontcare.org. You know what it is? It's a website, and it's just listings of postings from women that work at daycares. And they are frustrated because of how children are treated at those daycares. That one says, there will be a baby and it will be crying and I want to pick it up and hold it. And the people that run the daycare say, no, don't do that. Babies will be left just banging their heads, you know, just for long periods of time, just wanting some attention, and they're just ignored. Now, not every daycare is like that. Bonnie takes care of children in her home, and those children are loved and they are cared for. But Homer and Bonnie have told me that they've had parents who are annoyed because they want to meet with the parents before they start dropping their children off there. Do you understand that? These are people who have children, little children, and they just want to find somebody that they can give money to so they don't have to watch their kids. And then these people they've never met. Now, you know Homer, you know Bonnie, but these people have never met them. And when they say, we'd like to come in and meet you, they're annoyed because they don't want to take the time to even meet the people that they're going to turn their children over to. What kind of a world is this? There was time, I won't get into the details of it, but there's a lot of messed up children out there because we've got such an amoral society, we've got such dysfunction in the families, we've got such issues on the internet that there's a lot of predator and all sorts of situations coming along, and it's filtering down to children, and children are victimizing children and different things. And one time when friends running daycare had to deal with the situation, the supervisors over them, whether corporate or statewide, I don't know, whatever, said, shh, keep this quiet. They didn't do that. They let all the parents know where a problem had been, removed the problem, upboard and honest about everything. But that wasn't what the higher-ups wanted done. You need to understand, if you take a bunch of children in our society and put them in a room together, some of those children, quite likely, have been exposed to some horrible things, and they will sometimes then start enacting those things on other children. This is not the same culture that you grew up in, if you grew up several years ago. There's always been sin, there's always been problems, but there's just a lot of issues. Here's one quote from this site, Daycares Don't Care. an insider's view of preschool, otherwise known as a daycare center, that since the kids are there all day long. Please know that this can and probably does occur in a number of daycares across the country. It's not just a case of a poorly run daycare. I think sharing this letter would make parents who send their children to daycare and think it's okay think twice. I used to work in this particular well-known franchise, and if I learned anything at all, it's that you cannot leave your kids with strangers. They don't care as much as you do, and money is the driving force for many of the so-called daycares. Everything I'm going to say below is true, and then they go through and start listing things. I've talked to you've got people that want to take care of children well. I remember talking to a lady that ran a daycare, and she said, I'm trying to run a good one. She said, because I worked at the other ones. She said, at one of them, my job was to crudely color pictures. So when the parents came and said, look what your kids did. The kids are being ignored and not taken care of, and they pay somebody to sit there and do the coloring. She said, another time it was my job, after one of the daycare providers had hit one of them and given them a black eye, it was my job to tell him the small child had fallen off the slide. Another girl I knew worked there, she says, I was the drug girl, you know, walking around all the medications, some of which were necessary, some of which probably weren't. But it's just, we've got a society think this is what you do. There are cases in which people need daycare. And there are cases where the children are getting much better care in that place where somebody's caring for them than they would be at home. But we shouldn't be the parents that aren't taking care of our kids when we have the opportunity to. Underestimating threats. I think there was one other point I wanted to make about that other before I proceed, but I don't remember what it was, so we'll proceed. Yeah, I do remember what it was, and let me back up to that just real quick. In the opportunities I have during the summer to work with young men, one of the exercises I've sometimes done with them is I'll take one of the teenage boys and I'll bring him up here and I'll ask for a volunteer or something, maybe make a draft somebody. And then we say, we're going to fast forward through this young man's life. And so we go through his graduation and we say, where are you going to go to college? Which you going to study in college if he wants to do that? And oh, he wants to be an architect. Okay, there you go. And then he meets a girl. Somebody give her, and somebody picks a name for his future fiance. And then what's she studying college? Oh, she's studying this. And then we ask him, how much money are you going to be making? Sometimes their expectations are realistic. Sometimes they're not. But I'm going to be making this much money. How much money? She's going to be making this much money. Oh, so you got this much money and this much money. You got this much money. What do you want to do with it? What kind of house you want? He says, oh, I want this house. Okay, what kind of car you want? Oh, I want this car. And he picks his other toys and options, and they get all the stuff. And then maybe I take a Coke bottle or something wrapped in a towel. I say, Ran! And I throw him the baby. And he's like, I said, now what do you got to do? Give it to grandma? This isn't grandma's responsibility. You're the father of that child. She's the mother of that child. What are you going to do? One of the points I'm trying to get across there is what a lot of people do. They go into life, how much money can we get? What can we spend it on? How much money can we... And not only what can we spend it on, but how much can we borrow to spend money we don't have yet? And then when along comes a child, you've developed a lifestyle that requires nobody to be home. And then... daycare. Folks on the Family has some good programs about families and stuff and some good advice and different broadcasts. They've got an economist, and what he recommends, and I think there's a lot of wisdom in this. He said, for a young couple, he said, while you're both working as a young couple outside the home, away from the home, start putting aside one of those incomes in saving and live on one of the incomes. That way you've learned how to do it. And then when the child is born, the mother will be able to be there with that child. Makes a lot of sense. Underestimating threats. We're going to start on this, but not finish this. corruption from entertainment media and corruption from the internet. Also dealing with young people, what I've heard over and over from young men who, and this was back more before iPhones were quite as popular and smartphones and everything, when more of the problems were coming from the computer itself. And I would hear young men talking about the problem, and it would all, you'd hear the story start sometimes, I was at home alone. I was in my room alone on the computer. I was in my room alone watching TV. I was at home alone. Statistically, they say, you know when a great many teen pregnancies occur? At least a few years ago this was the case. Anybody want to guess? Between 3 and 5 in the afternoon. Anybody want to guess why? We've got a bunch of unsupervised kids. And we have a culture, I'm only going to introduce this now, I'm going to do a more detailed lesson on this later. But there was an interesting article in the news for September in a magazine. I'm not going to give right now the name of the app. But there's a computer app that is very, 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 very popular right now. To give you an idea of how popular about it is, there have been estimated 8 billion swipes on this. I'll explain what a swipe is in a minute. Now, understand the number 8 billion. How many people are in the world? 7 billion. Okay, there's been 8 billion swipes on this program. And it's not, hopefully, because you're using it, or you're using it, or you're using it, or I'm using it, but because the people that are just using it constantly. And what it is, and it's very popular in urban areas and in colleges and such. It uses people's Facebook profiles, and you can go through there and look at a girl, basically, and it's for one-night stands predominantly, and decide who you want to sleep with that night that you'll never see again. And if you look at it, and if you're a guy and that girl's not interested, you sweep left. Don't want her, sweep left, sweep left, sweep left. She looks interesting, you sweep right. Girls are using it, and there, sweep left, sweep right. Then, ba-ding, it signals you when you've got a match. And then they can contact each other. And the reporter covering this story interviewed a number of young men and a number of young women, and people at Wall Street and college girls and different things. And it's just sad what a pathetic lifestyle it was. One guy talked about, I slept with 4 girls in the past week and only had to spend a total of $80. You know, another guy, yeah, it was 4 or 5 in the last few days, and they were trying to remember who they were. Oh, yeah, there was this one, and then somebody, oh, yeah, that one. And they said, we don't know the girls, and they don't know us. The girls talk about it, and they said it's really, and college girls who were being interviewed, and the interviewer says, do you not date anymore? Do you not, you know, what? They said, no, this is just easier. But it's really sad because there's no attention. It's like they'd say all the guys are pretty much jerks. And they said, one guy drove me home afterwards, and that was a big deal. And they'll signal to people they've never met, and they'll be proposing just violence, choking, slapping, just, and this is just totally, totally, they'll say, can you meet me in 15 minutes? And these people will do that. The girls are very unsatisfied, but they keep doing it. And they know they're being treated badly. And the guys describe it, and they say, you know, they say, we don't know them. And one says, I always make it up front. I'm not interested in anything serious. That way, if there's any legal repercussions, I can show what I wrote. The other guy plays it differently. He says, I kind of pretend that I might be able to be a boyfriend. And then they are kind of hoping that I'll care, but I just don't. And the girls complain. They said there's no romance anymore. The guys, they've got no game left because it's just this. And the guys and the girls both complain it's just too easy. And it's just, it's taken something that God intended to be an act of love and intimacy between two people committed to each other for life. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And it's just made it a cheap commodity. One of them compared it to like ordering online food. He said, except instead you're just ordering an online person. And I believe it was some of the girls saying, we've been brought up on social media, and sounds like in the descriptions, neither the girls nor the guys know how to operate on a relationship level anymore. That's one problem of what's going on in our culture right now. And there's a lot of them. Parents, if after ignoring our children, if after not watching them, if after not taking care of them, and then when they're young, we say, hey, here's a laptop and here's an iPhone. We got a lot of hunters in here. There's time to teach a child how to use a gun and use a gun responsibly. Don't give a gun to a small child and tell them to go play with it. You know, average years ago, 10, 15 years ago, the average age of introduction to internet porn was 11 for boys. Age 11. Now, I'm quite confident that in many, 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 many cases, it's significantly lower than that. They get online and they play shoot 'em up. You wouldn't give them a real gun. They get online, they play like they're a race car, but you don't give a 10-year-old a driver's license. You don't give them the keys to the car. But the prostitutes on there are real. The predators on there are real. Some of you may have seen in the news just recently, there was a case where, I don't know who he was, but some figure, he explained to parents, he says, I'll demonstrate that I can get your daughter to come meet me without having meet me over the internet. And so this was on some of the Good Morning, some of the morning programs, some of you saw this. And in one case, he's in an unmarked panel van in front of the house. The mom and the dad who said, no, she won't do it. They're in the back of the van, they've got on ski masks to frighten the girl in case she comes. And some people thought, oh, this is a traumatic thing to do to the girl. And other people thought, well, it was a good wake-up call. But the thing is, he contacted her with the internet. Here comes this girl, like 15 years old or something, trotting out of the house and jumps in this pail van with somebody she's never met. And her parents from behind grab her and they just go, ah! And they said, it's us. What are you thinking? One young man, I remember talking to him, he said, my dad gave me an iPhone for my birthday. He said, I wish he had never given it to me. I'm going to take it back, and I'm going to tell him, fix it where I can't access this garbage or take it away from him. There's a world of corruption in there. There's a world of good things that can be done with it, too. But that's why we don't leave shotguns, or we don't leave a deer rifle that can provide venison for the family. You don't leave it lying around for children to play with. We don't put children in the driver's seat and send them down the highway. And before you just accept the norm and give your children just unfettered access anywhere and anytime and away from you, you need to understand some of the things that are going on out there. And the number of children that have been damaged by this stuff. And in a later sermon, sometime on Sunday night, I'll maybe go in a little bit more detail. It's just phenomenal. It's epidemic.
So realize the corruption out there and don't underestimate those threats. What do we need to do? Well, what we need to do is, if you're going to have a family, understand that the relationship of a husband and a wife belongs between a husband and a wife. Understand, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they too shall become one flesh. Make sure your children understand that. Teach our young men to respect young ladies. If they want to get married, to behave in such a way that they will deserve a young lady. Teach our young ladies to respect themselves and respect God, and look for a man that will respect them. And choose wisely, because as this world is more and more corrupt, and it's been more corrupt sometimes in the past, it waxes and wanes, but there's been some acceleration because of the internet is everything. When you pick somebody, you're with you. You're not just picking that girl because you think she's cute, you're also picking the mother of your potential children. Young ladies, you're picking the potential father of your future children when you marry somebody who loves your children. Pick what? Pick wisely. Pick somebody that's going to help you serve God. Pick somebody that's going to help your children serve God. And the rest of us, don't get caught up in thinking that because everybody else around us is living this lifestyle, that means that's the lifestyle we need to live. Watch. Be careful. Be thoughtful. Be wise. Be sober. For our adversary, as a lion, is looking for someone to divide. Let's not be throwing our children to the water. If you're such a man, that's wrong.